This is a special edition of NPR on Health. I'm Joe Neal. The Netherlands is the next stop in our 5-week tour of European health systems. There are 3 stories in this podcast, all reported by NPR health policy correspondent Patty Naiman. In the first report, Patty looks at how people in the Netherlands get care in the evenings and on weekends. She spoke with Deborah Amos of NPR's Morning Edition.
Ever wish you could get a house call from a doctor? In the Netherlands, you can, any evening or weekend. NPR's Patty Naiman went to the Netherlands as part of our series on healthcare in Europe. Patty, why did you focus on after-hours care?
Well, Deb, we're looking at countries that insure everybody and still spend less on healthcare than we do here in the U.S. One might expect that having doctors do house calls nights and evenings and weekends for everyone would be something no country could afford, but not so.
Okay, so how do they do it?
Well, it turns out that getting sick and being treated by a primary care doctor even after hours is a cost saver. The important word here is primary care doctor. In the U.S., some of these doctors do house calls, but the main place where people go to get care after hours and on the weekends is often the hospital emergency room. Now, that's partly because many people are uninsured and they don't even have a family doctor. But the emergency room is an expensive place to get medical care. So in the Netherlands, every neighborhood has what they call an after-hours clinic or post. And I spent one evening with doctors who work in one low-income neighborhood in Amsterdam.
All right, so let's hear what it's like.
It's early evening, 6 o'clock, and things are beginning to bustle. A couple of doctors gulp down dinner. A paramedic checks his medical bag for supplies. And Lita Vandenberg begins to field phone calls.
And what is the geboortedatum?
Vandenberg is a physician's assistant trained to figure out when patients can stay home and when they need to come into the clinic. She offers a variety of advice for things like ointments for rashes, what to expect with an ankle strain, whether a fever is serious or not. And sometimes she'll tell patients to come on into the clinic. On this night, they'll see Dr. Nora Bartelsman, the family doctor on duty.
And what do I have? Children with fevers, backaches, skin rashes, infected eyes, bladder infections, anything. The more serious situations, we'll visit patients in their homes. And what would be serious? Just a moment, please. Oh, my colleague has 2 house calls at the moment.
Bartelsman's colleague, Dr. Pascal Pock, has just received word that a patient who needs care is bedridden and can't come to the clinic. The patient's son is on the phone.
They can't really judge the situation. He just says that his father can't get out of his bed anymore and he can't tell any more details. So we just have to go and have a look what's going on.
So Pock and her partner, Gerard Cowell, a paramedic who also drives the car, head out. Even their transportation is geared to primary care. They drive around in what looks like a half-ambulance, half-taxi. It's a small Audi painted bright yellow and blue with a siren stashed inside that can be put on top of the car if need be. They have some medical gear, but not a lot. As they drive to the patient's home, another call comes in.
Hello?
Hello, met Regine.
Yeah,
hello.
About 5 minutes later, Pack and Cowell arrive at the first patient's home.
Hello.
Ushered in, Pack heads up a steep, narrow staircase. At the top, there are 2 tiny bedrooms with twin beds. In one room, a frail man lies in a sort of fetal position. His son wrings his hands. He explains to the doctor that his father is 91 years old and unusually listless. He won't get out of bed, not even to help his elderly wife, who he usually cares for. She's quite sick, too, and in bed in the next room. Dr. Pock begins her exam.
Hello. What is er met u aan de hand?
Ja, wist ik het was.
Wist u het maar. Vertel eens. Heeft u ergens last van? Waarom ligt u nou in bed?
Pock coaxes the man to sit up, takes his blood pressure, taps gently on his belly.
Even naar uw buik kijken hoor, meneer.
Pock decides this is not heart failure, even though the patient's calves and face are really swollen. She gives him an injection to relieve the fluid buildup and then gives the son a prescription for more diuretics and tells him to check in with the doctors in the morning. The son agrees, thanks the doctor, and then it's off. the second house call. This is an assisted living facility. It's bright and clean, particularly in contrast to the first house. This patient is also elderly, but he's up and about. His wife answers the door. They speak with Dr. Pak, and the patient describes abdominal pain that has now subsided. Pak decides to do an exam anyway. The patient's a little embarrassed that the doctor came here and the pain is gone, but the doctor says better safe than sorry. She suggests the patient had a hernia that retreated. After cordial goodbyes, it's on to the next patient, a terminally ill man with prostate cancer who is vomiting from chemotherapy. Pak gives his wife a prescription for anti-nausea medication. There's not much more she can do. Back at the clinic, Pak enters her notes about her treatment of each patient into their electronic medical records. Just like their family physicians, she has access to all the information about these patients and can pass along what happened this evening. A seamless communication system. Pak's about to settle in, but she gets a call about another patient, an elderly, diabetic woman who's disoriented and dizzy. This could be serious. Pak nearly runs to the car and gets to the patient's home within 10 minutes. The patient's son, Rudolf Haymeyer, is amazed at how quickly she got there.
I was still hanging on the phone. There was a miscommunication with the operator. I was waiting for an answer of the doctor will come. Then the doctor was here and I was still hanging on the phone.
This is the longest visit of the evening so far. Pak talks with the patient, her two sons, her husband, examines her and decides the patient must go to the hospital. Pak calls an ambulance and leaves the son in charge. Of the six patients she's seen tonight, this is the only one she admits to the hospital.
Well, I do think house calls are very good to have because, as you could see, that several people who were quite ill, who weren't really able to come on them with their own transport to a GP or a hospital or whatever, I could still manage to keep at home.
A more comfortable situation for the patient, says Pak, and a lot less costly for the healthcare system.
The cost of an ambulance is already very high, and as soon as you're in a hospital, you have to do a certain amount of tests, which we don't do. And very often you can keep people at home, and especially if they're very ill or terminally ill, I think it's much more patient-friendly and also better for your budget.
And for those patients who were able to travel to the clinic and see Dr. Noral Bartelsmann, it's still a cheaper option than a hospital ER. While Dr. Pak was out on house calls, Bartelsmann saw about 30 patients in the clinic.
Anxiousness is always a good reason to see someone. If parents are worried about a sick child, we let them come. If they have symptoms that haven't been going away, we let them come. If they have things that we think need to be seen, and especially on Friday evening, it's a long wait until their doctor's back again on Monday. So we'd rather see them now than wait till Monday to see their own doctor when they could have been treated much earlier.
Across the Netherlands, there are about 120 after-hours clinics like this one, and over 90% of the Dutch population has access to them. Patty Neiman, NPR News.
Next, Patty looks at Dutch pragmatism and how it works to keep costs under control. That enables the Dutch to provide universal care. She starts by explaining the Dutch health system to Michelle Norris of NPR's All Things Considered.
American voters say health care is one of the top issues they want the next president to address. So this month, we're reporting on European countries that have taken a different approach to health care to get an idea of how other health systems work. NPR's Patty Neiman went to the Netherlands to survey health care there. And Patty joins us now. Patty, tell me first how the system works in the Netherlands.
Michelle, all individuals are required by the law to buy insurance. They do that either on their own or if they're low income, they get some help from the government. Insurance companies are private, but they are also required by law to sell health benefit packages for the same price to everyone. Now, in addition to people being required to buy insurance on their own. There's also a tax on salaries. Employers contribute to that, and that helps pay for subsidies for very sick individuals and for the poor.
So how did the system develop, and what does it say about the country?
Well, the system really developed from the Netherlands' sense of egalitarianism, solidarity, and a certain practical nature. As far as egalitarian, everybody participates. Everybody shares in the pain. Everybody pays. Employers, employees, individuals, and the government. Solidarity, anyone who can't afford insurance or is very sick, they get some help. They get help from the government in buying their insurance. So there's a certain sense of helping one another. And realistically, the system spends liberally on treatments that are effective. Treatments that don't work, they don't spend so much on. They focus a lot on primary care and on disease prevention, and that is the focus of Holland's healthcare.
So, Patty, let's take a listen to what you learned on your trip.
In the Netherlands, most women try to have their babies at home. If complications arise, they end up in the hospital, but women delivering at home saves the Dutch healthcare system a lot of money. And for Dutch women, home feels like the right place to be. They view birth as natural, not medical. And there are a lot of services available to reinforce that. In Amsterdam, for example, there's a center which combines a spa, a shopping center, a school for pregnant women. There's a daycare center here, classrooms for teaching about natural childbirth, a massage room, a cafe, and plans for a sauna and whirlpool.
The street where we are now in is called Birth Street, and some people call it the Birth Canal. And because in this street you can do anything what you need if you're pregnant or when you are a mother.
Beatrice Smulders started this center 30 years ago. She's a midwife who's probably Holland's most vociferous proponent of natural, no pain medication, childbirth. In fact, only 8% of all Dutch women have epidurals during childbirth.
I'm a pain seller, in fact.
It's Smulders' belief that epidurals interfere with the process of birth and that pain, on the other hand, helps guide it.
If you feel pain and you are pushing, it's painful, you stop for a while. Then you can stretch and you push again. And so the pain leads the woman away how to push out the baby safely. If you're totally numb, like in many women in the States, she doesn't feel anything and the baby's pulled out, but the woman cannot say stop because she doesn't feel anything. So a lot of lacerations and damage is done because the woman is not in touch with her pelvic floor anymore.
That's not necessarily what Dutch doctors think, though. One obstetrician says he thinks a painful delivery actually interferes with mothers and newborns bonding. Whatever the case is regarding pain, one thing is clear. Universal prenatal care and women giving birth at home have combined to produce an infant mortality rate that is about 25% lower than in the U.S.
Are you hungry?
Kim Oy just had her second baby without any pain medication.
Yeah, it's painful. I mean, after the first one, I was like, oh my God, we should get a medal. We should get paid for this. I mean, this is like, but yeah, in the end, yeah. It gives you a sort of natural high.
Paul Schnabel is a sociologist at Utrecht University in The Hague. He says that childbirth at home is part of the Dutch philosophy to keep people out of hospitals and doctors' offices unless they really need the treatment.
That's why you see that many deliveries here are still at home, because people think, well, it's a natural thing to have a baby and not a disease. That's all fits in this picture, that you should keep things as natural as possible. That's a strong feeling.
And at the end of life, the Netherlands has legalized euthanasia. It allows doctors to help patients die by giving them a lethal dose of medication.
You could say it's very much accepted by the general population that people can decide on their moment of that they would like to die and that you could help them. But if you have a bad cancer which is aggressive and which is bringing a lot of pain or suffering, most people know, well, I'm not going to recover from this. This is going to be the end. More and more they decide themselves to have it stopped and to step out of life.
And between birth and death, the Dutch medical system is quite practical as well. You might even say stoic. They tend to view people in the U.S. as weak and needy, popping a pill for everything from mood to virility to memory. In the Netherlands, Schnabel says, the notion that life can be challenging is embraced.
life is not easy and that certainly is not fun, and that you have accept that life comes with problems. It helps you to grow. It helps you to become an adult, a person who can endure hardship or can endure problems and will grow by, let's say, being challenged by them and not immediately taking medicines or whatever.
As a result, the Dutch spend less than half what the U.S. spends on medications per person, and even less than what Canada, France, Germany, Switzerland, and Australia spend. And Schnabel says it's the primary care doctor who keeps patients away from unnecessary medication.
And his philosophy is that most of the pains, most of the inflictions you have will go away by itself. And if you really are suffering, I will give you some medication, but only for a short time and just as much as is needed, not much more, and certainly nothing extra. And that's a philosophy from the doctors, but it's also the philosophy in the population.
But the Netherlands is not immune to the lure of expensive modern medical advances, and so things are changing. In the town of Maastricht, in the southern part of the Netherlands, obstetrician Jan Niehaus says today more and more women want epidurals and more want to have their babies in the hospital.
In Holland, many women get frustrated because they have so much pain and they can't get an epidural. And they think they are being told that they are losers, that they did not perform well. And it's very sad, in fact.
And more epidurals mean more babies are born in the hospital because when pain medication is used, the fetal heartbeat has to be monitored. And also, for end-of-life care, there is some pressure to change. Like in the U.S., the Netherlands faces an aging population increasingly exposed to advances in technology and medications. Those treatments can be life-extending, but they are also very expensive. Patty Niemand, NPR News.
Finally, we look at another aspect of healthcare in the Netherlands that might be useful for the American system, how the Dutch managed chronic long-term illnesses. Diseases like cancer and heart disease and diabetes can all be pretty expensive. It can get even more expensive when the care is fragmented and uncoordinated, as it is in much of the U.S. But the Dutch have been perfecting a system of coordinated care that greatly improves the outcome of people with diseases like diabetes. Here's Patty Naiman's final report on the Dutch healthcare system.
This story starts in the U.S. Steve Edelman lives in California. At age 15, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes.
I didn't really realize that a lot of the things to maintain my care, like a yearly eye exam, yearly kidney test, yearly cholesterol test, things like that, were not being done. It took me 10 to 15 years to finally realize what I needed to do to avoid all these terrible complications of diabetes.
Diabetics often lose feeling in their feet, which can mean broken bones and ulcers. Eye problems can lead to blindness. Patients can suffer seizures and even die. No one ever talked with Edelman about these potential complications or how to avoid them. As a result, he now suffers eye and kidney disease. Because of his experience when he was younger, Edelman became a doctor and diabetes specialist. He works at the University of California, San Diego. Dr. Edelman says the fragmented care he experienced when he was younger can be blamed on the healthcare system as a whole, but he says it's made worse by health insurance companies.
I've gone through hell and back with my insurance company getting approval for this continuous glucose monitor, which is FDA approved, and I've also had problems getting an insulin pump, which has been around now for 15 years.
Edelman has spent enormous amounts of time trying to get his insurance company to pay for the care he needs.
And I say to myself, and I've said to my wife, I'm a doctor. I know how to get around the system. I scream and yell. I say the right keywords. And I have had a hard time getting some of the things I need. I couldn't imagine how it is for a layperson who's not a physician to have to deal with this system.
Which is why Dr. Edelman created a website to help other diabetic patients. It's called Taking Control of Your Diabetes.
Patients living with a chronic disease, such as diabetes, need to know what they need to do. And that ranges from controlling their sugar levels to their blood pressure to their cholesterol to getting on an aspirin, things like that.
In the Netherlands, there's no need for patients to be so proactive. 10 years ago, the government responded to a projected diabetes epidemic by training thousands of nurses to care for these patients. Take the case of 62-year-old Renee Tyne. Tyne lives in Maastricht in the southern part of the country. Like Steve Edelman, he's struggled with diabetes for years, but unlike Edelman, Tyne isn't completely on his own.
93.2. Wat was het de laatste keer?
Every 3 months, Tyne spends about 30 minutes with a nurse specifically trained in diabetes. Marcel Broesten says this half hour is particularly valuable for Tyne.
He doesn't always think the right way for his diabetes. He thinks he's doing well, but he ends up with low blood sugar levels or too high blood sugar levels. But he can inject too much insulin, he can inject too little insulin, he can be bicycling too long or uses too much energy. It's difficult. I think it's difficult for all the patients.
Difficult, but these routine meetings 4 times a year help keep Tyne relatively healthy. He's an avid biker who enjoys treks through the hills in nearby Belgium. But recently, Tyne did suffer a setback.
It all started when I was on vacation in 2004. While I was on holiday, I had to go see the doctor every day. My toe was getting bigger and redder.
Once Tyne got home, his general practitioner sent him to the Diabetes Center at University Hospital in Maastricht. He was diagnosed with a rare problem that occurs in patients who no longer have feeling in their feet. The nerves don't function properly, the bones weaken and crumble, causing sores and infection, and can sometimes even lead to amputation. But when those symptoms began for Tyne, he got comprehensive care. His diabetes specialist, Dr. Nicholas Schopper.
He was immediately referred to our multidisciplinary outpatient clinic for diabetic foot patient problems. And there is a team of an orthopedic surgeon, an internist, a rehabilitation doctor, and a shoemaker, and a plaster technician who immediately could start therapy with intensive treatment with plaster techniques.
Tyne wore a plaster cast for about 4 months. Today, his foot is pretty much back to normal. A success, Schopper credits, not to luck, but to a system that's geared to kick into action when problems occur. Compare that to the U.S., where it's fair to say insurance companies try to avoid patients like Renee Tyne, and patients like 43-year-old Neil McGill, who lives in Chicago. McGill is overwhelmed with medical bills.
Oh, I have one from the hospital, which is $43,000. I have one that's $11,000. I have some that's $4,000, $5,000, $2,000, $5.67.
McGill's insurance covered only $1,500 of the hospital costs. He's a part-time employee, so he had partial benefits. McGill works in a warehouse lifting and moving heavy boxes. And like Renee Tyne, he doesn't have any feeling in the bottom of his feet.
I came home Saturday morning and discovered that I had blood on my sock and the battle cap was inside my shoe.
McGill's wound was treated, but it became infected anyway.
My blood was infected through my whole body, which caused my foot to swell and it was pain and everything else.
Doctors tried to avoid it, but McGill's toe had to be amputated, and with it, a lot of natural padding on the bottom of his foot was also removed.
So, Mr. McGill, I'm about to go and inject you. I'm going to use a little bigger needle than I normally use because we're going to go and...
At Chicago's Rosalind Franklin University Hospital, McGill's doctor, Stephanie Wu, injects his foot with silicone to help build up the padding and reduce the pressure on his foot. But McGill's still in pain. Surgery would help, but he can't afford it. A $675 custom-made shoe could stabilize his foot, but he can't afford that either. After McGill maxed out on his hospital bills, his insurer dropped his coverage. For now, he pays his doctor what he can, when he can. Dr. Wu.
I do whatever I can. I go beg and plead for him. And it's very frustrating because I feel like I spend more time writing letters to insurance companies than treating patients.
I think that's a ridiculous system. And I think it's a very costly system.
Dutch endocrinologist Nicholas Schopper.
Your system, if I may say so as a foreigner, is extremely insufficient and extremely overspending on a minority of patients and underspending on a majority of patients.
The U.S. spends more than double what the Dutch spend on health care per person. But in the Netherlands, everyone has health insurance and access to medical care. The Dutch government even pays insurance companies a subsidy to make sure they cover high-cost patients like René Tijn. Wijnand van de Ven is a health economist.
It means that for an 80-year-old person, on average, the insurer will receive the tenfold payment that they receive for the young ones. And within each age group, they receive a much higher payment for the chronically ill, the diabetic patient, the cancer patient, the AIDS patient.
So instead of running away from high-cost patients with chronic problems, Dutch insurance companies end up competing for their business. Patty Namond, NPR News.
That's it for this podcast. We'll have two more weeks in our series on the universal healthcare systems of Europe. Next week, we'll look at Great Britain, and then we'll go to Switzerland. There's more on our website about all this. You can go to npr.org/health and look for the Healthcare for All banner. When you're there, you'll find an interactive chart that compares all the countries in our series. And you'll also find a new video report on the only universal healthcare system in the U.S. Thanks for listening. I'm Joe Neal, NPR News.